Listen. Hello? We go out, we hit people in the mouth.
You play to win the game.
Next fan up.
I want winners.
Featuring Pod Vader and the super fans.
But they are who we thought they were.
And welcome to another exciting edition of the Next Fan Up podcast. I am Pod Vader. We continue with our division previews, and today we will be previewing my favorite division, the AFC East. If you missed the AFC North division preview, please go and subscribe to our podcast on iTunes, and you can do that by going to iTunes, search Next Fan Up. Hit subscribe, leave a review of the show. That'd be great. By the way, not only will you get the AFC North division preview, but you won't miss any of the division previews that we'll present after the show. And you can go back and listen to any of our other programs where we talk to great guests like Matt Williamson, Matt Chatham, and any of a number of guys. We've had so many guests in the show, I can't even list them off the top of my head. That's not the only place you can get this podcast. We encourage you to download the AHA Radio app, either on your Google Play or on the iTunes Music Store. That is another way that you can also get our podcast. We're also available on Stitcher and TuneIn Radio as well. And send us your comments via email. That's nextfanup@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you. We're on Twitter @NFU Podcast. And of course, we're posting many things on our Facebook page. Just go to facebook.com, search nextfanup. Our page will pop right up. Or if you want to go directly there, it's facebook.com/NFU Podcast. You'll see our most recent posts would be our podcasts, but we also have the top 10 players for every team on our Facebook page. You're going to want to go check that out. And if you disagree, just leave a comment in the comment section. And in a future show, we will most likely feature your comments. That's all the interesting / not so interesting, boring promotional stuff. Let's get down to the podcast that you've all been waiting for. It is the AFC East preview, and I am joined by three of the four podcasters who consider themselves super fans for their teams. And I will start with the team that finished first in the division, not only last year, but many of the years prior. And that is the New England Patriots and Patrick Ciska. Hello, Patrick.
Hey, Pod. How you doing?
Doing quite well, doing quite well. I will do my best to remain as unbiased as I possibly can, but we know that that will be difficult, especially when the man who is the super fan for this team, we have to give him equal time, and that is Andrew, our New York Jets super fan.
Yeah, I can't believe I'm saying this, but it's actually a shame that Ron, our Dolphins super fan, isn't here, because then I thought we'd have you guys outnumbered with me and the Bill superfan and with Ron, but looks like we're going to have to take your crap this entire show.
I won't dish out too much of it. And as you mentioned, Robert is one of our newest superfans in the AFC East. So I'll try and play as nicely as I possibly can as it comes to the Buffalo Bills.
Oh, that's very sweet. Thank you.
I do my best.
I'm personally glad that Ron's not on, because if I had Rob and Ron on the phone talking about their teams, I'd have trouble keeping track of which guy's talking about going 6-10.
So we will get your predictions on win-loss totals towards the end of our conversation. As we did with the AFC North, I want to start the easiest way to start the conversation is through the all-division team, and we'll post these on our Facebook page probably within the next month as well. And the AFC North went through each position, picked out their top players for the position, as we did here in the AFC East, and I think it's no surprise to anyone that the number one quarterback in the AFC East is really the number one quarterback of all time. I'm sorry. I'm supposed to remain unbiased, but it's Tom Brady. And I don't think it's anywhere close. Andrew, you don't even really have a quarterback quite yet. So I'm not going to ask you about your quarterback. Robert, how about your quarterback? You feel he's making strides towards the Tom Brady's of the world?
You know what? I'm happy that he's just making strides towards mediocrity. He's a decent quarterback, but unfortunately, he's not at Tom Brady's level.
At running back, which I think is an interesting position in this division, LeSean McCoy is listed as the number one guy. So that, again, remains up there in Buffalo. Robert, what do you think?
I think he didn't have last year. I mean, he was a little injured, so he did miss a couple games. But I thought that, you know, the games he played, I think he's the most talented running back in just as pure talent goes. I think he's has the most pure talent in the AFC East. I know we've added, you know, Forte's in the division now. He's a good running back, but I feel that LeSean McCoy is the top running back in the division.
I mean, you just have to look at Miami and you look at New England's running back situations. They're probably two of the worst in the league, especially with Deion Lewis coming off a torn ACL. So there really wasn't much competition. The biggest competition other than Forte probably comes on his own team, and that's with Carlos Williams. So McCoy was probably the clearest pick there.
Yeah, I'm not that necessarily sold that Matt Forte is done, but we can get more into that as we get further into the division preview. The interesting position where there was a lot of conversation amongst you three and Ron was the wide receiver position. And we put three in here: Brandon Marshall, Sammy Watkins, and Julian Edelman taking the third slot. Andrew, I know you mentioned Eric Decker was a possibility, but you weren't really going to push it.
Yeah, I would go Decker just based off the fact that the difference of quarterbacks they have throwing to them. I feel if you put Decker in Edelman's spot and you put Edelman in Decker's spot, it'll be a big difference in production. But that's also an easy argument to make and something that we're never really going to find out. So I wasn't really – I'm going to pick my battles, and I'll go with Edelman. I think Jarvis Landry is also a possibility there. He's a guy – that you could make an argument for as a third receiver, but Brandon Marshall is clearly number one, and I'm ready to fight anyone who's ready to argue that.
Spoken like Brandon Marshall.
Well done. At tight end, it is again a no-brainer in Rob Gronkowski, as he's the best tight end in the game. The question would be, is the number two guy and the number three guy also New England Patriots? Martellus Bennett being the number two.
Well, who, rubbing it in, Pod.
Yeah, but who would be number three? I don't even. Michael Williams? Is that who you're? I mean,
no, Clay Harbor. No,
I mean it's the Jets had the least amount of production of any tight end group in the league last year. So the Jets don't really have a representative. I mean, they hope Chase Amaro comes back this year after a lost year due to injury. He was a high second round pick 2 years ago, and he led all rookies in catches and in yards amongst tight ends that year. But he was out all of last year. And then the Bills, I would say the Bills had the third guy. I mean, they hope they do. They're paying Charles Clay to be the highest paid tight end in football. So, Rob, you could talk about that. I mean, what are your expectations for Charles Clay coming into next year?
My expectations are that he's not going to get as injured as much this year, which is not really his forte. He's kind of had a couple little injuries, seems like every year. He went out of his way in the offseason to say that the Bills are a tight end by committee, which is not what you want to hear out of a guy that you're paying as much as we're paying him. I think he's a good tight end. He kind of does everything. He's a good, you know, inline blocker. He's fairly elusive in the open field when he does get the ball. It's too bad Ron's not here because he can attest to that, because the first game that the Bills played Miami, on the first drive, he made a couple real nice moves and scored a touchdown. I think he's probably the third best tight end in the division. I like him, but he does get injured a little bit. And his, unfortunately for me, his production doesn't necessarily come out for as much as he is paid.
All right. So that's where the argument at the tight end position belongs. But at the top of the tight end position, it's clearly the Gronk. The offensive line: left tackle Cordy Glenn, left guard Richie Incognito, center Pouncey, right guard Carpenter, right tackle Sebastian Vollmer. Any disagreements on the line? Any other considerations here?
Well, we put Carpenter at right guard, even though he played left guard last year, because there isn't really a ton of talent at the right guard spot in this division. I mean, for years, the Dolphins have had the worst set of guards in football, so they weren't an option. The Bills, while they have the left tackle and the left guard well represented, are they don't have the right guard. But the biggest argument would probably be the center position, as each team, I mean, not including the Patriots. I mean, Stork had a decent had a couple decent games, but the Eric Wood for Buffalo, Nick Mangold, who has been the best center of his generation, is probably a Hall of Famer. And the guy who we ended up going with, which was Mike Pouncey, they all three of them are well above average players at their position. I mean, I'm not going to sit here and break down offensive line play. I mean, I'll put you guys to sleep and probably put the rest of the audience to sleep. Sorry, Ross Tucker. But at this point, I don't think there's much to be argued with on either side, especially with Vollmer at right tackle. Even though he struggled a bit at times on the left side, he's still one of the better right tackles in the league.
All right, cool. So we move to the defensive side of the ball, and we're looking at on the defensive line, we're looking at Richardson, Sue, Darius, and Wilkerson. Still not a lot of Patriots showing up on this list, Pat, and I assume you're okay with this.
Well, I think that's the group that I actually put on paper for the first draft of this. The Patriots have, you know, really good, solid, you know, line play on both sides of the ball, but it's not like we have a lot of individually dominant players along either front.
Fair enough. Were there any other gentlemen here being considered on the defensive line?
Kyle Williams, maybe 2 years ago, would have been a guy that would have been on this line, but as Rob can attest to, he just wasn't healthy last year. So we ended up putting Marcel Darius there. Jerry Hughes has an argument also, but I just think Richardson and Wilkerson are two of the most talented defensive linemen in the league. Well, we did go with a four-man front, and those guys usually play inside on a four-man front and outside on a three-man front, but we're just trying to get the best talent on the field. So those are the guys that I'd go with. I don't think the Patriots have anyone you could really point to, and Cameron Wake, if he was healthy and if we knew he was, and if he wasn't 34 years old coming off a torn Achilles, maybe he would have an argument. But I don't think there's much to be argued with these four guys.
I think when you see, you know, no Patriots in there, I think what people feel like is, you know, the blueprint to stop the Patriots, not that it's really worked in the past decade or so, is to have that strong front line play. And you see a lot of money invested. Buffalo has, obviously, they just gave Darius a huge contract. Kyle Williams is, I believe, making $8 million a year. You know, they've invested in that front line. They gave Jerry Hughes big money last year in free agency. The Jets have a great, you know, front three. And then Miami, even this offseason, they went, and I don't agree with it at all, but they spent money on Mario Williams. Have fun with that, by the way. As well as, you know, they have, you know, Sue, who they spent big money on. So I think it's logical for the other three teams in the division to kind of represent the defensive line, just because, you know, the feeling is that if you're going to beat the Patriots, the way to do it is with a strong front.
At linebacker, we have Jamie Collins, Harris, and Hightower. Again, I don't know if there's a lot of conversation at the linebacker position. Maybe someone from Buffalo? No.
I don't think so.
Yeah, the Dolphins and the Bills both have two of the worst linebacking groups in all of football. And Collins and Hightower are two all-pro talents, so those are clear. And somehow David Harris is still there. And I mean, that's more of a product of the weakness of the linebacking core in general, the division. But he's still a very solid linebacker against the run. And while he does have trouble in coverage sometimes, he does make plays here and there. So I don't really have an argument with him being the third guy that you'd put on the field for this division.
I mean, if we want to make it an all-Patriots linebacking core, Rob Ninkovich just moved to middle linebacker if you're watching OTA coverage. So, hey, let's throw him in there.
No. and I suspect that that's a move more being done to try and get the versatility between Ninkovich and McClellan. Because I don't foresee Ninkovich playing linebacker a ton. on Sundays, I'm going to be really scared because he can't cover worth a nickel. Speaking of covering,
he picked off Brady on the first play of OTAs.
Well, that's not a good sign either. It's a good thing he's going to have 4 weeks off. We'll get to that. The corners. Darrell Revis, and this is the interesting one, Malcolm Butler, the second cornerback.
Yeah.
That's interesting. Andrew, go ahead. I can hear it already in your voice.
I mean, I think Rob has a bigger beef with this than I should, because I think he has two corners that should be ahead of Butler. But I think Revis is an interesting conversation too, because yeah, while he name value, he's still the top guy, and I'd still probably choose him as the top guy coming into this year. He didn't play at that level last year. I think both of those Buffalo corners had better years, and Butler, they're probably on the same level, but maybe that's a product of Revis taking the top guy week in and week out. But I wouldn't be surprised if Revis has a bounce back year. But Butler, he's a good cornerback. I don't think anybody disagrees with that, but I feel like there's a sense of if you say something bad about Malcolm Butler, all of New England nation's going to come after you and go all Aaron Hernandez on you. So I'm scared for my life right now. It's a good thing I'm holed up here in my office, but you're talking to, you have Rob there, who I think I take Stephon Gilmore and Ronald Darby, who had a great rookie season. I take both of them over Malcolm Butler, especially after watching Eric Decker tear Malcolm Butler to shreds in the slot in both games last year.
Yeah, I personally think that either one. I think the one thing that the Bills do have, I think we have a real strong set of starting corners. I think that Darby is going to be a superstar. I think either of them could go. I think they're all kind of close in that same class. Maybe it's just the fact that I lived in Boston for a couple years, so I knew not to get in that argument because I didn't want to get verbally beat down in the forum. But I think you could definitely go with either of those two guys in there in case of Butler and instead of Butler. The fact that it's him, I don't think it's, you know, they're all pretty close. I think those two are better, but. You know.
Are you guys seriously capitulating on the starting corners because you're afraid of getting into an argument on Slack about it?
Hey, it wasn't my fight to pick.
Show some fortitude. No.
Fortitude for what? For the Bills starting cornerbacks? I don't care about the Bills starting cornerbacks.
Oh, man. All right. I'll take it.
I think they're all kind of in the same group as far as talent-wise. I personally, I'm probably a little biased because I, you know, watch all the Bills games. I think they might be a little better. But, I mean, to me, it's not egregious, so I didn't feel it was necessary to really make too big of a deal about it.
Yeah, it's not egregious. And I also think Logan Ryan, the other corner on New England, also has a good argument to be in that group as well. So I guess it all evens out at the end of the day.
And I was just to take a shot at Stephon Gilmore because I can, you know, the thing with him is his inconsistency. Some days he looks like he can't be beat, but there's other days when he looks pathetic out there and he gets beat every single time. But I hear what you said, Andrew. Malcolm Butler playing the slot against Decker was not a good idea by the New England Patriots at all. All right, the safeties, we have Devin McCourty, and I'm assuming this is Rashid Jones as the other safety?
Rashad Jones, yeah. He actually is among probably the more underrated players in all the league, more underappreciated players. He's probably one of the top five safeties in all of football. He's very good against the run, and he holds up well in coverage as well. He's so good, actually, that even though he has 3 years left on his contract, he wanted to sign another deal this offseason so he could be paid amongst the top guys in the league, which he already is. He's making $8 million a year. He wants to make closer to 10 or 11. But he's probably one of the guys you don't hear about because the Dolphins just aren't very good.
How much money do the Dolphins have? Like, why do they not have a salary cap? Like, where's Ron on this?
It's funny because when Mike Tannenbaum was running the Jets, it was sort of the same situation. It seems like the Jets got every player they wanted and every player was making a ton of money. And as we saw in the subsequent years, it sort of came to bite them back in the ass. At least the Jets got two AFC title game appearances out of it. And it looks like the Dolphins aren't going to come close to that. I mean, we'll get into that later, but you're right. It seems like they always have money to spend no matter what, no matter how many guys like Sue or Mario Williams, or they just gave Cameron Wake an extension. It seems like they always have money, but we're going to see in a couple of years, they're going to be hamstrung. And by them not hitting on these guys in the draft, it's really, and not getting cheap young guys, it's really going to hold back their roster for the future and make them be stuck in maybe the same mediocrity they've been stuck in for almost two decades now.
Yeah. Meanwhile, the Patriots are suiting up arguably the second best corner in the division and paying him $600,000 a year. Right? Like that's the difference between the Patriots and the Dolphins, if nothing else.
I will tell you that according to overthecap.com, the Dolphins have a little over $17.5 million in space. They're carrying $10 million in den money, which is probably what's got them a little bit hamstrung right now. And if I look ahead to 2017, they drop down to $22 million in available cap space.
Right, and that's without having the guys to sign. I'm sure they have free agents in those years too, and they only gain another $5 million in cap space from that. Right. So it just goes to show that they're in a couple of years they're going to be in a really bad situation.
Yeah, I actually don't want to look ahead to 2017 because we have like 40 pens.
I'll finish the thought there for Pat as he's fading out once again. 2017 doesn't look good for the Patriots in terms of re-signing free agents. As we know, they don't like to pay top dollar for their free agents, and these guys are all going to demand quite a heavy sum, and there's quite a few of them on the list to be taken care of. So let's stick with the Dolphins, at least for the immediate future here, as they finished last in this league last year at 6-10. Do we see any improvement? I would normally ask Ron at this point, but since he's not here, I'll start with you, Andrew.
I mean, they're hoping that Adam Gase could figure out what no other coach has been able to figure out in Miami yet, and that is how to get Ryan Tannehill to be even be more above average. Because right now, I'd put him a little below Alex Smith, and Nick can attest to how little of a fan I am of him. But Tannehill is one of those guys, if he throws the ball more than 10 yards in the air, it's probably going to be incomplete. So, but Adam Gase has a good reputation around the league. He was the offensive coordinator when Peyton Manning broke, and that Denver Broncos offense broke all those records in 2013. And then, yeah, you could argue that that's because he had Peyton Manning and all those weapons. But then he moved to Chicago, and he got the best year of the Jay Cutler in a really long time. So maybe Tannehill could be that guy. But there are so many other holes on this team. They did improve the offensive line. They're hoping Laremy Tunsil could give them something at guard that they haven't had in a long time, which is decent play even. But it's a little weird that they're putting Tunsil there, because I actually think he's a better left tackle than Brandon Albert is at this point. And maybe that's just because Albert doesn't want to move inside. But you look at the defense, and they're counting on a second round rookie, Xavien Howard, or Tony Lippett, who played wide receiver at Michigan State and now is playing cornerback, to be a starter as a number two corner, let alone having Byron Maxwell be the number one corner. And then you look at the defensive line. Mario Williams is coming off one of the worst years a defensive end has ever had. Like he was really, really unproductive, and not even on the field, but off the field as well, where he didn't get along with Rex Ryan. Just let that sink in for a second. I mean, Rob could probably tell us more about that situation, but when's the last time you've heard a player not getting along with Rex Ryan? I mean, it seems like he's the ultimate player's coach. I could tell you that from being a Jets fan. And then again, their linebackers, they're counting on Kiko Alonso to come back healthy and be the guy he was in Buffalo his rookie year. And I don't think that's going to happen. It just didn't seem like he was the same player. Maybe another year off injury will help him out. But out of all the teams in this division, I don't think there's any shot that this is the team that knocks off the Patriots from the top.
Robert, how about your thoughts on the Miami Dolphins?
Miami, I'm curious to see what they do at running back. Ajayi, you know, the kid from Boise State, is he the guy? They seem to be talking him up from just little snippets that I've read. I mean, is he going to do enough to replace Lamar Miller? I agree with Andrew in regards to the offensive line. I'm a little surprised that they're not just plugging Tunsil in a left tackle. And, you know, moving Albert over to the guard position. I think that would be the best as far as your five up front. Mario Williams, oh, he's the worst. He says he's got a new attitude, and the first thing he does is skips voluntary workouts in Miami, which I think is a little silly to make when you're trying to make a first impression, and you're saying you're going to be more in, you know, team wise than you've been before. You basically acknowledge that, you know, you were kind of a terrible teammate the year before, and first thing you do is don't show up to the voluntaries. He was bad last year, not only on the field. He was getting sad because he had to drop into coverage. That's kind of something that Rex Ryan does with his defense a little bit, but everybody does it. All teams do it. I don't think it's anything that's terribly exotic. All he cares about is rushing the passer. So eventually something will happen in Miami. He'll decide he doesn't want to play anymore and he'll sulk. That'll happen by week four. The schedule for the AFC East is just a lot hard. It's just a little harder this year. So I don't think that, you know, they're going to improve on their, you know, win loss record from last year. Even if they had a better team, I don't think they necessarily would. So I'd say, six, seven wins. I think Gase will be a nice, he'll do well for that offense. I think Cameron, the tight end, will have a fun year this year. Gase seemed to, like last year in Chicago, use the tight ends quite heavily. But I don't think that what he's going to bring to the table offensively is going to be enough to add to the win total from last year.
It just seems they're counting on a lot of guys to step up, whether it be like Devontae Parker through the first round, the first round pick from last year who came on a little slow because he had a foot injury, or whether it be Jay Ajayi, who Rob mentioned, the running back from Boise State, or Kenyon Drake, the running back at Alabama, Kenny Stills, a lot of question marks. And then you have Ndamukong Suh in the middle of that defense, who contrary to popular belief, had a good year last year, still had a very good year last year. He just, with that contract, it's very hard for anybody to live up to. And in classic Tannenbaum move, they spread that cap even further down the road now. So he's going to be on that team, on that team's cap, whether he's on the team or not coming up. And then again, you have those rookie corners or that second year corner trying to make it. And then you have those young linebackers who you're not even sure could play football at this point in their career. They just have a lot of question marks for a team that spends a lot of money with a lot of big names. And it's all going to, again, quarterback can mask everything in this league. I mean, you just look to the top of this division. And if Adam Gase could get Ryan Tannehill to live up to his draft position a couple years ago, then maybe they do have a shot of making a wild card or even challenging the Patriots. But that's a lot to put on his shoulders, and I'd be very surprised if he's able to do it.
Let's, for the moment, Patrick, assume that Ryan Fitzpatrick doesn't return to New York. Is Ryan Tannehill the second-best quarterback in this division?
Yes. I mean, but it's kind of a pretty far drop from Tom Brady to number two.
Wow, I was really surprised you didn't just say Jimmy Garoppolo. maybe we are making progress.
Let me ask you guys, like, I want to try and throw a bone to the Dolphins. Do you think Tannehill has the hottest wife of any quarterback in the division?
Yeah, especially when she has that assault rifle in her hand.
Oh boy. All right, I'm gonna try and take control of this again.
Wait a minute. Whoa. No one's gonna put Giselle out there. I wasn't really trying to throw them a bone. I was trying to set somebody up to say Tom Brady's wife's hotter.
Oh, man. All right. I'm going to take control again. Let's move on. We all seem to think the Dolphins are pretty much what they are. They are who we thought they were, and that's not very good. So we'll move up the ladder here to the Buffalo Bills, who entered last season with high hopes and ended the season with a mediocre 8-8, the very definition of mediocrity at .500. So, Robert, what have the Bills done to hope to improve from that 8-8 record?
This offseason was basically about trying to avoid getting in what the Dolphins seem to be going into that kind of, you know, situation cap wise. So they did trim a little bit of fat from the roster. They did sign a lot of guys who I think some positions are small upgrades. I think some are small downgrades to what they had, to much more team friendly contracts. And then it's starting to get Cordy Glenn, the big contract, which is a little high, but it's a left tackle. So it is what it is. I liked what the Bills did in the draft. I think our offense is a little better than people think. I think Greg Roman's offense, the way it's structured, is, you know, a real kind of interesting offense as far as running the ball, which is what in Buffalo, when you get snow in October, is something you need to, you know, probably do. The Bills just attack defense in the draft. I'm real excited to see how Reggie Ragland's going to play in the middle as the thumper. I did like the Shaq Lawson pick. Unfortunately, I didn't have access to all his medical history. So looks like we're not going to get him for the first couple weeks of the year at least. So we'll see how it goes. I think the Bills could be a better team than last year, but not necessarily have a better record because their schedule, at least on paper, looks a little bit harder than it did last year, for sure.
So there are a lot of issues I have with this team. You mentioned the Shaq Lawson thing. I think that's just a perfect encapsulation. I mean, as a Jets fan, I feel like I could come out and say this of just the Rex Ryan regime in Buffalo. They take Shaq Lawson and they're asked about his medical history and they're like, no, he'll be there week one and literally he won't have shoulder surgery. Then 2 weeks later, he has shoulder surgery. So that's point one. And then another issue I have with the Rex Ryan regime, and this was very prevalent in New York as well, is I feel like they're the only organization or he's the only guy that once they take a draft pick, he's a day one starter. He's starting day one, no competition. He's the guy. And I don't think that's very good for player development. I mean, you just look at the way the Jets are doing things now. I mean, Leonard Williams was forced to start because of Sheldon Richardson's injury, but he was brought along slowly. Looks like Darren Lee is going to be brought along slowly. He's going to be playing on some packages. And it doesn't breed good competition. And I think that the fact that he has to win right now. And the Buffalo owner came out and said, if we don't make the playoffs this year, Rex Ryan and Doug Whaley, they're gone. So Rob mentioned that they trimmed fat off the roster, which it's counterintuitive because if they need to win right now, I feel like they should be going all in right now. And that's just job preservation, becoming more, that's just job preservation being more paramount than actually winning on the field or a long-term building. So those are two things I look at. And I mean, before I go on, if Rob, if you'd like to respond, because I have a lot more to say about this team.
No, I actually agree with you. I agree with a lot of what you said as far as Rex Ryan, the type of culture that he brings. I don't know if you've ever read the book Collision Low Crossers.
I am in the middle of it right now.
I read that book, and can I tell you, when they reached a deal with Rex Ryan, the first thing I did was I ordered that book and read it, and it kind of scared me. Just the way he handles a couple things. The coach that no one liked, that far. It was literally the first coach he brought on his staff to Buffalo. I mean, so he's not learning from his mistakes. I think that this is going to be the new owner in Buffalo. He's got a lot of money, so he's not afraid to fire Rex Ryan after 2 years in a 5-year deal. Like, he'll do it. So I have a feeling that this may be, you know, if this goes how I think it's going to go, this may be the last year of Rex Ryan in Buffalo, which would be a surprise to, you know, a lot of people in Buffalo that are just kind of casual fans, but that, I don't know. I just don't like the culture there, to be honest with you.
And if I may, when we talk about trimming the fat, he actually added some as Brother Rob is now the defensive coordinator.
Oh,
that says it all. Like
you especially, Andrew.
Besides the culture situation there, I look at this roster and Tyra Taylor had a good year last year. And it's one of, I just wish that Rex Ryan was able to get a quarterback like that in New York. I mean, apparently Tyrod was actually Rex's choice. He always liked him, which isn't that much of a surprise because Rex was always the guy who said facing a running quarterback is one of the most annoying things to do because you have to worry about the run and the pass, blah, 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 blah. But I look at that offensive line and the right side really scares me with John Miller and Jordan Mills, respectively, at right guard and right tackle. Both of them had really off years last year, and they're counting on them to be starters. And then you look at the weapons they have. I really like what they have in the backfield with McCoy, Williams, Gillislee, those guys. I think they also took another guy in the draft. But outside of Sammy Watkins, we mentioned Charles Clay, but he was just decent. You have Greg Salas and Robert Woods as your next two receivers, and I don't really look at those guys as difference makers. So while, yeah, the offense was good last year, I wouldn't be surprised to see it take a step back this year either.
Yeah, the offensive line on the right side is definitely not as good as the left side. I agree it would be nice to have a better wide receiver situation depth-wise. You know, obviously we lost Hogan in the offseason. The Patriots signed him to a restricted deal that the Bills just couldn't match. But the way they run their offense, they do a lot of two tight end stuff. So it's not, I don't think, as it's definitely a need for sure. I don't think it's, you know, the biggest need ever on this team only because, you know, they do a lot of two tight end stuff. Towards the latter part of the year, they were bringing in offensive tackle. They were playing a lot of, you know, three tight end, playing a tackle as one of the tight ends, just trying to get creative with the running game. I was hoping in the offseason that they'd add a better option as a second tight end, as opposed to they signed Dre out of Cleveland, who's, you know, a blocker. He's, you know, I was hoping they could add someone who could catch a little bit, give them a little bit more diversity in the two tight end sets. But unfortunately, that didn't happen.
Patrick, what are your thoughts here on Buffalo?
I think it's telling that everybody, not in a good way, that the most excitement in Buffalo right now seems to be around the drafting of a run-stuffing middle linebacker. Yet we started the call by talking about the all-division teams, and we couldn't really come up with a good running game in our division. So what's this guy really going to do?
That's a solid point there. I mean, if nobody in the league, in the division, can really run the ball, does a run-stuffing linebacker really make that big a difference?
I mean, there are eight other games, there are 10 other games that those guys are going to be playing in, but again, I before the draft, there were rumors that the Jets would take Reggie Ragland, and I wasn't going to be a fan of it if that happened. And instead, the Jets sort of went the other way, and they went with the linebacker that sort of seems to be the future at the position, or the way a lot of teams are playing with the middle linebacker spot, in Darren Lee, a guy who could sort of be a third safety or another guy in coverage who could take that tight end, or it could be that pass rusher speed guy off the edge or up the middle. So yeah, they ended up taking him in the second round, Reggie Ragland. They traded up for him, so maybe it ended up being amount to a late first round pick. But by Rex Ryan logic, they could afford to lose Shaq Lawson now because they got a second first round pick in Reggie Ragland. So everything's roses in Buffalo.
Ugh.
That's literally what he said. I'm not even making that up. That's literally what he said.
Let's finish on the Bills with this, Robert. Is this Tyrod Taylor's first year as uncontested, the number one quarterback on the roster?
Last year they had a little three-way dance to see who would be the quarterback. He obviously won it out and played well last year. This is his first year going in as the guy. Behind him is EJ Manuel, who is, I believe, defined as hot garbage. I'm scared that if Tyrod does miss time, he missed two games last year. If he misses any significant time, the Bills are going to have a lot of trouble offensively because Tyrod's someone that you have to game plan for. He can run the ball well, and he, he can throw the deep ball well too. I mean, the last half of the year, him and Sammy Watkins were really kind of in sync. And averaging, I think the second half of the year, they were averaging just about or maybe slightly over 100 yards a game together. And so he was kind of the offensive proved as the year went on. I think a big part of it was Tyrod getting comfortable in his environment and getting comfortable with his new teammates. So if we lose him for any decent stretch of time this year, I think it's going to be a lot of trouble. EJ Manuel basically gift wrapped at a game against Jacksonville last year. It was terrible to watch. Fortunately, a lot of people didn't see it because it was an overseas game, so you could only watch it. It was like 7 a.m. on Yahoo or something like that. But yeah, it was brutal, just brutal.
So we'll move up the ladder again to the team that would always love to be the winners of the division, but always seem to find themselves just short, except for that one year. It was that one year, but it was only that one year, and it was many years ago. And I'm talking about the New York Jets. They finished 10-6 last year, and as they went to improve their team, there seems to be one place where the Jets always seem to figure out a way to screw things up. And of course, I'm talking about the quarterback situation. And I think any conversation about the Jets has to center around that quarterback situation, Andrew.
Well, if E.J. Manuel's hot garbage, I guess that makes Geno Smith lukewarm garbage. But he, again, this is going to be another test case in terms of coaching and in personnel surrounding a quarterback versus the quarterback making everyone else better. There was a I wouldn't say I'm on the Geno Smith bandwagon, but I also don't think it's as dire a situation as everyone's making it out to be. Listen, I'm not saying he's going to be good, but he never had receivers around him. There's a stat of Rich Samini came out with this week that I saw that when he only had one of Eric Decker or Jeremy Curley, remember talking about Jeremy Curley, just one of those guys on the field, he put up league average quarterback rating. But ooh, but now he has Decker and Marshall and actually has an offensive coordinator knows what he's doing in Chan Gailey. The last year before training camp and before he got punched in the jaw, he was supposed to be the starting quarterback. And I was advocating for him to start over Fitzpatrick just because he has more upside than Ryan Fitzpatrick had. And yeah, I didn't think Fitzpatrick was going to have as good of a year as he did last year. But I also think you're crazy if you don't think he's going to regress either. If you don't think Ryan Fitzpatrick's going to regress this year, just rewatch those games. How many passes of his bounce off receivers, opposing cornerbacks' fingertips, or how many were batted up at the line and just in the defensive player was an inch away from picking it off. And especially because now they have a tougher schedule. I think the way the Jets are playing this Fitzpatrick situation is actually it's perfect. I've been saying it the whole time. There's no reason that you should be hamstringing yourself in future years for this guy. I mean, you just have to ask Rob and the Buffalo Bills what happens if you do that. So again, this is just another product of the New York media and the national media looking for a story. And it's an interesting story. I'm not going to say it's not, especially in this dead period of the NFL. But I think there are a lot more many other issues surrounding this team than just the quarterback position. I mean, we'll get into those more, but I'd like to hear what you guys have to say when it comes to the Jets quarterbacks.
I'm a big fan of Chan Gailey. I don't think he was the best NFL coach ever. However, I think as an offensive coordinator, he does a fantastic job. I mean, he got 16 touchdowns in 8 games out of Tyler Thigpen. He can work with what he has. Fitzpatrick, just to touch on, big money. He signed, I believe, a 5-year, $65 million deal in Buffalo. In the middle of the season, literally the next game he got injured, and the game following that he played and it was terrible for the rest of the year, and it was terrible the following year, and then the Bills actually ended up getting out of the contract pretty quickly. So I agree. I think that Fitzpatrick had a career year last year. I don't think that he's quite as good as, the 31 touchdowns suggest. I think other quarterbacks can go in and be successful when you have a couple really good wide receivers like the Jets have. And I think Chan Gailey runs a very QB-friendly offense that that can work with someone who doesn't have to be a superstar.
Right. And that's what they're betting on with Geno Smith. They'd rather pay him $1 million a year than pay Fitzpatrick 16, which is what he wants. It appears that they're offering Fitzpatrick 3 years, $24 million, with $12 million in the first year, which, again, it's a little bit of a low ball, but again, he has nowhere else to go. You really think he's just going to not play football this year? He himself came out and said he's going to play. The only way that this backfires on the Jets is if something drastic or something catastrophic happens to someone else's starting quarterback in training camp. And I don't think Fitzpatrick's going to be willing to wait that long. I'd be shocked if he's not signed within the next month.
So let's look a little deeper at the New York Jets, and let's assume, for the purposes of this conversation, Ryan Fitzpatrick will not be the quarterback, and we're looking at Geno Smith. He has all the weapons around him. He has arguably one of the best wide receiving cores in the league, certainly of this division, in Brandon Marshall and Eric Decker. The question marks probably are at tight end and maybe on the offensive line, but Matt Forte, I think, is a huge victory in terms of getting weapons around a struggling quarterback.
Yeah, and when they signed Forte, the first thing that came to my mind was the Jets' best stretch last year came from week 10 to week 16, or week 11 to week 16, when they won five straight games. And the biggest factor there was that Bilal Powell became a factor out of the backfield. He became the third option in the passing game that the Jets were missing all year after Marshall and Decker. I mean, there's a reason. I mean, week 17 against Buffalo, Powell didn't play, and you could see that there was a big difference in the way the offense was being run. Fitzpatrick, instead of checking down to Stephen Ridley or Chris Ivory because he just didn't trust their hands, he was forcing the ball to Decker in the end zone, which ended up being a huge interception, and forcing the ball to Marshall. But now he has Matt Forte, probably the best pass-catching running back of this generation of the past like 5-10 years. Then you have Bilal Powell, who again, was that guy during that stretch. And then they also picked up Kyrie Robinson, who they're hoping could do what Chris Ivory did. And it's not out of the realm of possibility that he could provide that either. So their backfield is set. When you're talking about the receiving core, that's where I disagree with you a bit, because after Marshall and Decker, there's a lot of question marks. They took Devin Smith in the second round last year out of Ohio State. He was supposed to be their burner on the outside, but he got hurt in training camp and then started struggling in the middle of the year and then tore his ACL. So he's not going to be ready. They have Kenbrell Tompkins, who the Patriots representatives on this podcast are familiar with. He'll either show up or he'll just do nothing. So you can't count on him. And we mentioned Jay Samaro earlier in this podcast. He's the guy who's going to be the deciding factor, because he has the potential to be one of the better tight ends in this conference. So those weapons that Chan Gailey has to work with, there's enough for him to work with there, especially if they go multiple in the backfield, if they put Powell and Forte on the field at the same time and sort of do what the Patriots do with Gronkowski, where they have him in the backfield and they motion him into the slot or to the outside so the quarterback could get a better read of what the defense is showing them. So I like what the Jets are doing on the offensive side of the ball, but Todd mentioned the offensive line. Ryan Clade is a huge question mark. He's replacing DeBrickashaw Ferguson, who wasn't good last year. Ferguson was not good last year. So Clady, if he stays healthy, could be a huge upgrade on that end. But he's had a history of injuries. And then I don't even want to talk about the right side of the offensive line. Right now they have a giant competition at right guard with a bunch of draft picks that they've taken the past couple of years. And then they have Bruno Giacomini at right tackle, who I think is going to be cut, because the Jets need cap space to sign Fitzpatrick, and if they cut Giacomini, they receive $5 million in cap space. So the offensive line may be an issue, but Chan Gailey and Ryan Fitzpatrick were able to mask that last year, where the Jets didn't give up many sacks, but they gave up a lot of pressures and they gave up a lot of hits, but the offense was still one of the top 10 offenses in the league, which is something the Jets haven't had in a long time.
While you're at it, why don't you just tell us about the defense? I mean, that's probably the strength of your team.
Yeah. Again, the defensive line is the strength. We did lose Damon Harrison, who was the best run stuffing nose tackle in the league the past couple of years. But it's a question of how much a product of his production was of him playing with Richardson and Wilkerson, and last year Leonard Williams, who had a great rookie season. So they still have those three guys. And at linebacker, they finally have the guy to be able to at least give the tight ends and running backs a shot. They finally have the guy to cover those running backs and tight ends who they haven't been able to cover since God knows when. Every time the Jets face a team with a speedy running back or a pass catching tight end, you know that's the guy that's going to beat them. So they drafted that guy, and they still need that outside pass rusher. They're counting on Lorenzo Malden to be that guy. Last year he was a third round pick out of Louisville, and he played limited snaps, but in those limited snaps he was very productive. And now he's going to be a full time outside pass rusher, so they're counting on him. And then you look in the secondary, Antonio Cromartie was released, and yeah, he's still out there, but Marcus Williams is being counted on to take up that spot, and he had 6 interceptions last year, so maybe he's up to the task. It seems every team needs an undrafted type guy or a low drafted guy to be able to come in and be a productive starter at a low salary rate, just to be able to justify having those other high salary guys like Darrelle Revis on the field. I mean, that's the issue with Miami, is that they don't have those guys. But the Jets are counting on guys like Malden and Marcus Williams, and again on the right guard, whether it be Brian Winters or Dakota Dozier or Brent Quayle, those guys to be able to make up those salaries, to be able to be those cheap guys on those cheap salaries and be able to be productive. And then at the safety position, Calvin Pryor finally was moved to his natural strong safety slot when Rex Ryan was here. Rex was trying to save his job. Again, job preservation, trumping winning on the field in the long term. They forced Pryor to be that free safety, that last line of defense, and that's just not who he is. He's that thumper Cam Chancellor type of guy, and last year he was that guy, and he played very well. And the Jets' worst stretch of the year came when he was out, so him being healthy is going to be paramount to the Jets' success this year.
Pat, I know you've been salivating. Go for it.
About what, the Jets?
Yeah.
I mean, on Pryor, who I loved coming out of, it sounds like the identical twins have the same problem, because that's exactly what Rob Ryan was trying to do at Jarius Bird. But I don't know. Like the Jets are always a solid team top to bottom, with the exception of the quarterback, and they always fall apart, you know, toward the end of the year when it matters because of it. Like, it's pretty well predictable. And they're going to be the second best team in the division, and that'll be great for them. But, you know, it's second place, right? They're like, they'll contend for a wild card spot is what they're going to do.
Well, low expectations. I like it.
Robert,
I hope you're comfortable with that.
What's that, Pod?
Thoughts on the Jets?
I don't know. I mean, I think it was pretty well covered. I think, you know, they are pretty solid everywhere, but quarterback, I think Chan Gailey, even if Fitzpatrick's not there, he's going to get more out of the quarterback than people think. I like what their offense could potentially look like. You know, defensively, it's going to be interesting to see how, you know, I mean, Snacks Harrison was a beast. I wish the Bills had money this offseason so we could try to get someone like that. But I think it's going to be interesting to see how they do stopping the run, possibly with someone of that force in the middle not there. But I still think they probably are the second best team in the division, you know, and they'll contend for a wild card spot.
Yeah, I think you guys are both all saying second best team in the division. I don't think it'll be a shock if they come in last either. Those three teams are there's always a cluster with those teams. And yeah, the Jets seem to come out on top in that sort of consolation prize of the division, which is just typical. But I don't think it'll be a shock, because as we mentioned before, they'd have holes on this team that could be exploited. And besides the quarterback position, and it wouldn't be shocking to see them be exploited and have the holes on Miami or have the holes on Buffalo be covered up by the guys that they are trying to cover up those holes with. So I said low expectations, but that's more to do with the Patriots than anything else. But if you guys keep saying second best team, I mean, I'll take it, but I don't think it's a given either.
I think I agree. I think all three teams are fairly close. I think the Jets, probability wise, are probably the most likely to finish second, but it could be any of the three teams. I mean, I could come up with a scenario where the Bills finish 10-6, 11-5, if everything breaks right for them. Right. But I can also come up with one where Tyrod Taylor gets injured, LeSean McCoy starts getting a little wonky because he's starting to get just a touch of, you know, because he's seen a lot of reps and, you know, they win 4, 5, 6 games. So I just feel the safe of the three teams, the safest bet for second is probably the Jets. I think the Bills are more of a safe bet than the Dolphins for second place. But really, depending how the season goes, it could be any of the three.
Right. And I think what separates those teams is regime and is administration. McCagnan and Bowles seem to be on the same page, which hasn't been the case in the Jets front office in a while. I mean, we already talked about the dysfunction in Buffalo, which where they're fighting for their jobs, and that rarely leads to good results because there's a lot of short-sighted moves that ends up being made because of people trying to save their jobs. And Miami, I mean, there's last year I said Miami had no shot at being good, and I was right because their GM, their coach, and their president all came from different regimes. So, I mean, they're trying to get everything together now, but I just don't like that roster so much. But again, I think, it's one of those things. You just have to look at the Patriots, and I'm sort of setting up Pod for a segue. You're welcome. You just have to look at the regime at the top and the stability there. And I like what the Jets have going on there for the future with McCagnan and Bowles.
And so I will thank you for that transition, Andrew, and we'll move to the New England Patriots, who finished the division 12-4 last year. Patrick, do we see an improvement or a slight decline here for our Pats?
Can I go with a push? It's going to be tough to improve from that record, especially with the presumptive absence of Tom Brady for a quarter of the season. Where I think it gets interesting, though, is I do think they'll probably end up at 12-4 anyway. And then, you know, due to the good graces of, you know, the recently deceased Roger Goodell, condolences to his family, that, you know, we're going to be showcasing our very good-looking, and this matters if you're in a large media market, AJ Jets, our very good-looking backup quarterback who's got some promise and a year plus left on his contract. Right. So if he comes in, throws, you know, 12 touchdowns, 3 picks, I'd like to start the rebuilding project that we have looking at, you know, 2017 by getting a first round pick for that guy, which would not have happened if not for, you know, our key benefactor in New York.
I don't see us getting a number one. We've never been able to pull that trick off, the number one pick or a first round draft choice for one of our backups.
Think about that for a second, though. Like we've been trying to get rid of clear backups, you know, who are on the last year of their deal. You're not going to get a number one for that. We got a number two. Like, I'll take that, right, from KC, and that worked out well for both parties. But, you know, if you know, he's got more than a year left on his contract, if he has all of 2017 left on his rookie deal, and he comes in and proves to be a capable starting quarterback, we have several teams in this league that have not addressed. I know we're giving AJ a hard time because he's on the phone, but we've got several teams in this league that have not addressed their quarterback situation this year, right? So it's like it's a seller's market, and we're going to have a guy that's got some oomph behind him. And I think the Patriots put their cards on the table with that a little bit by drafting his replacement in the third round. They wouldn't do that if they weren't planning on trading the guy.
It's only a seller's market if there are buyers, and clearly this offseason those teams didn't feel like they needed to buy. So only if those teams fail this year will we have a seller's market on our hands.
I'm looking at week five, and I'm looking around the league at a bunch of teams that are 1-4 with no quarterback play. And, you know, that's going to be a pretty good time to try and, you know, get something for a guy that you really don't have any long-term designs on.
Yeah, but it's going to be difficult for a team to trade for a quarterback. When's the last time a team traded for a quarterback in the middle of the year and then inserted him into their offense? I have to change everything. I'd be surprised if they trade him in the middle of the year. But next offseason, I'd agree with you. If a team needed a quarterback, which it seems to be every year a team needs a quarterback, then I could see a team trading for him. But you mentioned a seller's market. I mean, right now it's not. I mean, all you have to do is look at Ryan Fitzpatrick, because no team is willing to give up anything to get him. It seems every team has filled up the quarterback slot except for the Jets. But next offseason, there's going to be a bunch of teams who need quarterbacks. And if Garoppolo plays well, he'll be an option. And a team will give up a first-round pick. All you have to look is at the money Brock Osweiler got this past offseason. Would you rather pay Brock Osweiler $18 million a year or give up a first-round pick and get Garoppolo on a cheap deal and have another look at him? I mean, I don't think either are the best options, but you have to choose something. And I wouldn't be shocked if a team does next offseason.
And that's what I'm saying, man. It's like, if you're a subpar quarterback like Brock Osweiler, who when he did play didn't show you jack, and you got to give $18 million to get this guy into your team, right? Wouldn't it be better if you could trade for him like after a couple showcase games, and then you get him for the year plus, right? So like, if you would trade for this guy in 2017, wouldn't you give up the same pick to get this guy in like a quarter of the way through your current season?
It's a great sales job. Right. I'm not arguing that point. I just think we haven't seen it. So until we see it, I don't think we can guarantee that. Now, yes, we did pull off the trick and got rid of Matt Castle for a second round pick. That would be just as fine with me as well, considering the Patriots don't seem to value first round picks anyway. Looking at the team and some of the improvements or lack of improvements, perhaps in some situations that they've made. Right now, we have Tom Brady, the best quarterback in the league, with Rob Gronkowski, the best tight end in the league. I love the improvements at tight end. The depth chart at tight end is fantastic. But we did not add anyone at running back. I don't feel that that was a necessity. I think LeGarrette Blount is fine as a big back. And I think James White is a little underutilized in terms of being a third down change of pace type back. And Deion Lewis will be back from an ACL. He obviously will not be the Deion Lewis that we knew before his injury. And he's now has a slew of injury history. The wide receiving core right now is a little bit banged up, but right now we're talking about the preseason. We're not in the season, so there's still plenty of time for them to get healthy, but that is of concern. And on the offensive line, which was the one area that was a shambles last season, there really was no improvement made to that offensive line, and we're just relying on rookies having another year of experience behind them.
Right.
And the return of our Hall of Fame offensive line coach.
Yeah, I was going to say, Czarnecki is back, isn't he? That should improve things a little bit.
I think more than Czarnecki, I think just having another year with those guys. I mean, offensive line play more than any other position, it's more about chemistry between the five guys. And maybe those guys will help. But also, I think another thing that's being overlooked is that, yeah, they brought in Martellus Bennett. And Bennett and Gronkowski are two of the best blocking tight ends in football. And when I was doing work for Pro Football Focus last year, I was doing a lot of Patriot games, and I had to chart every passing play. And the formation that they liked the most was to have those two tight ends on the field and split one out wide and have one in line. But they didn't really have – I'd be watching a guy like Michael Williams playing out wide and teams just completely ignoring him. But now that they have Gronk and Bennett, they're not going to be able to do that. And having one of those monsters out wide in single coverage on every play while having basically an extra offensive lineman on the field in line is going to be a lot harder for teams to get the pressure on Brady that they got last year. So that's going to be something for other teams to look out for. But again, it's going to come down to Gronk staying healthy. And I really like what the Patriots are doing this offseason, where they're just not having Gronk practice. I mean, they know that he doesn't need it and only bad come from it. So they're just having him sit on the sideline during OTAs.
Moving to the defensive side of the ball, Chandler Jones was traded away, but Jabal Sheard and the acquisition of Chris Long hopefully will be the replacements that are needed to replace the production that Chandler Jones provided. We look at another year of Marcus Brown, or Malcolm Brown, sorry. at the nose tackle or the defensive tackle position, along with Branch. That should also be pretty solidified. I think the defensive line is pretty solid. You mentioned Ninkovich practicing at linebacker in OTAs. I actually don't think he's going to be playing at linebacker. And as I mentioned earlier, I'd be very scared if he plays a lot at linebacker. I think he's better suited as that lunch pail defensive end kind of guy. Now, the question will be, can Shea McClellan provide any assistance at the linebacker position? Because that is the one position that I also was worried about, despite having two beasts in Jamie Collins and Dante Hightower. There's really nothing after those guys.
Well, I mean, we have two beasts, which for me is fine because 70% of the time, that's all you're going to play with anyway, because you're going to be in sub packages the majority of the time. I also think, incidentally, if you watch all of the Patriots' defensive moves in the offseason, we're actually going to go back to the 3-4 as our base, because in addition to getting rid of Chandler Jones, we got rid of all of our light defensive tackles. All the speed guys are gone. It's just the big fat guys. They brought in more big fat guys. And they're playing Chris Long at left defensive end in Ninkovich's spot, presumably in sub packages to rush the passer. So I think that's our starting. I think that's like our core defense going forward. It's either going to be a 3-4 base on the off chance that someone decides it's 1989 and they should run the ball. You know, but when they're throwing it, like I think you're going to see Ninko in the flat, probably. You're going to see Chris Long coming off the left, and you'll see Sheard coming off the right.
And when we're talking about the corner depth, I think Malcolm Butler has definitely established himself as a top guy. But Logan Ryan certainly came on towards the end of the season. The question is, where's the depth after those two guys? Because now you're looking at rookie draft picks and maybe undrafted guys that they picked up late in the year last year.
And a seventh rounder from last year that spent the whole year on IR. Like, we got that guy too.
Oh, great. I think the safety position is pretty solid. Devin McCourty, Patrick Chung has been good. We know what his limitations are. Obviously, when he's in coverage, he's a little bit of a liability, but he did play a little better last year.
Mm-hmm. And we have solid depth behind those guys too. So, I'd like more corners. I don't know who wouldn't, right? It's a passing league. If I'm downplaying the role of the middle linebacker, I can't undersell like the importance of having good corner play. But overall, I think we're pretty solid on defense front to back. And I don't really have a lot of concerns about that entire group.
All right. So it's the number one team in this division. We're going to get to the win-loss predictions in just a moment. But first, we're going to bring in James, our Texans super fan, as he's been kind enough to put every team to a Game of Thrones character. We did this with the AFC North, and now James has come to tell us which AFC East teams relate to that Game of Thrones character. Hello, James.
Hello, Pod. Thanks for that warm introduction. So for this, obviously there's not going to be any repeats. So while you may think that there's a better character for your particular team, it's possible that another team is even better suited for that character. And on top of that, like I cautioned in the AFC North preview, on an exercise like this, there's not really a right answer per se, but there are definitely wrong answers. Like Buffalo is never going to be Rob Stark. So if you have your hopes up for that, I'm just going to dash them right off the bat. So, speaking of Buffalo, we might as well start with them. You're going to have to go back. Thankfully, the show revisited this character briefly this season or last, and it's Balon Greyjoy of the Iron Islands. The reason I picked him for that, Buffalo usually has an okay defense. The Iron Islands are known for going out, conquering a couple lands, and then immediately losing them. He's often forgotten. You know, he's just kind of up there. Nobody really cares all that much about what the Greyjoys are doing. I feel that's kind of fitting for Buffalo.
Yeah, and he's also got the hair of Rob Ryan, so I think that it was a good choice.
Excellent. Not greasy enough. Moving on. Which way is not greasy enough?
Either.
All right, keeping things in alphabetical order with Miami, I went with Marjorie Tyrell. So she always seems to be on the latest and greatest king. First, she was with Renly back in season two, I think. Renly died. So then she was with Joffrey. Joffrey also died. Now she's with Tommen and has been manipulated by the Faith Militant. So she's really only out after herself. She's always getting a new free agent, as it were, you know, kind of the hot free agent to try and move up quickly. Ultimately, though, with all of her scheming, all of her moves, she really hasn't taken over any power and doesn't really have any influence in the realm as of yet.
She pretends to care about the fans, but she doesn't really care about the fans.
She's also not unattractive, and Miami tends to be an attractive spot to land places. Although, when it comes time to perform, she tends to walk away.
All right, so that brings us to New England, and what will probably be one of the more controversial ones.
Yeah, I'm right.
Tyrion Lannister for New England. You know, ultimately that character is the one moving a lot of the strings in the show. He's not only hated by just about everybody, but he has a fair amount of self-loathing despite all of the success that he has had. And that just perfectly embodies like a New England Patriot fan. Like, yeah, we've done really well, but that's still not good enough. We're still not respected enough. And, you know, why couldn't we just do better? He has no issue whatsoever cutting ties, shall we say, with people that are close to him, Shay most notably. And then, while maybe not necessarily the closest person, he did kill his father, which is pretty good parallels to what the Patriots have done with, you know, people like Bledsoe and, you know, any number of their free agents in the past.
Don't forget that people think that he murdered the king, but it's not actually true.
Yeah, but he's also the hero of this story, I think. And most people would attest to that. And I don't think anybody looks at the Patriots as the hero.
Because they don't think he killed the king.
But even so, I think if you were to choose somebody, I mean, and to the top of my head, I'd probably go like Night King or something for the Patriots than Tyrion Lannister. But I understand what you're saying with the whole characterization point. But
I'm surprised a Bolton wasn't brought up here for the Patriots, because I think that would have been fitting as well. The fact that the Boltons have reigned hard over the years, but the downfall is coming. I think it's coming. Episode 8, I think, is when it's currently scheduled for Bolton versus Snow.
Nine, actually.
Nine.
Spoilers, Todd?
What's that?
No spoilers. What are you doing?
It's not a spoiler. It's well-known knowledge. In any case. All right, moving on. The New York Jets.
So, last but not least, the Jets. And with them, I went with Brienne of Tarth. You know, she kind of gets things done, but not in a spectacular fashion. You know, she was sworn to protect Renly, kind of failed at that, through, you know, mostly not her fault, or, you know, it would seem to be not her fault. Swore to protect Lady Catelyn. She also died. And now she was charged with protecting Sansa and Arya, failed at that, has reunited with Sansa. And, really the only thing kind of standing in her way is this, slavish devotion to honor. And that's kind of what the Jets are stuck in right now with Ryan Fitzpatrick. Like, they don't want to pay a premium for Ryan Fitzpatrick, just like Brienne isn't going to compromise her morals to go from saying she's going to accomplish something to actually accomplishing something. The one thing that she did accomplish that she set out to do was to kill Stannis. But the only reason she was able to kill Stannis was he was wounded on the battlefield and already at the point of death. So that kind of seems like what the Jets would do, just kind of declare victory over something that was kind of already a foregone conclusion.
Well, Brienne's going to come out on top at the end. I don't think she's going to die. I don't think the writers will kill her. So I'm okay with that.
Looking like the lack of death is not the same thing as winning.
In the Game of Thrones, I mean, you not hear the Cersei Lannister quote in season one? In the Game of Thrones, you either win or you die. So if you don't die, then you win. So
it's a false dichotomy, and you know it.
All right, James. Thank you for bringing us the Game of Thrones comparisons. We'll continue to do this through all the division previews. And as previously mentioned, the AFC North has all of their characters. If you missed that, go back and listen to those shows on our archive on iTunes or at blogtalkradio.com. And of course, if you have any of your own suggestions, please send them in via email, nextfanup@gmail.com, or tweet us at NFU Podcast. Thank you very much, James.
All right, thanks, guys. Enjoy the rest of the preview.
Thanks, James.
And now to wrap up the AFC East, we will go through the win-loss predictions. I'll start things off. As many of you know or may not know, I do this every year. I go through every single game of the NFL season and predict a winner and a loser. This year, as I look at the AFC East, the schedule is a lot tougher for this particular division, as the NFC West and the AFC North are the opponents for these teams. The Dolphins finished last season at 6-10. I actually have them at 5-11 for this particular season. I don't see a lot of improvement for the Dolphins. It doesn't look good for them.
Agreed.
I mean, again, this is not to rain on your parade, Pod, but I always feel like this is a little bit of a ridiculous exercise. But I mean, but this is coming from the guy who hosted a 2-hour AFC preview and a 2-hour NFC preview where we also made predictions at the end. So who am I to talk? But the Dolphins, if I had to choose one team to be at the bottom of the division, I'd probably choose them.
Next up, the Bills were 8-8 last year. I've got them taking a little bit of a step backwards and going 5-11. And again, this is mostly due to the level of competition that the AFC East will be facing, that NFC West and the AFC North. And actually, the AFC West is also on the docket. That's going to be a little too much to overcome there, Robert.
No, I agree. The schedule looks a lot different than last year. The thing that I'm worried about is I know that the owner gave the edict playoffs are bust for, you know, Rex Ryan. I'm almost worried that they're just looking at their schedule, that they're going to win their last three games and he's somehow going to save his job. Because they play the Browns, the Dolphins, and then they're in New York for the last game of the year. One thing I will say about Rex Ryan is when he gets up for a game, we tend to do well. And I believe that was kind of the same way he did things in New York. There would be random games that he got up for where they just played out of their mind. I can almost picture him doing the same thing and him somehow saving his job.
Well,
but saving his job means he's making the playoffs. So,
yeah.
And the way that I see the season going, by the time they get to the Browns, I actually see that as being the Browns' first victory, but that's giving away a little too much.
Oh, not in Buffalo, not in Buffalo.
Well, I'm just saying, at the point of the season, Buffalo will be down on themselves already. If Rex hasn't lost his job at that point, it could be a surprise. Moving to the Jets, who finished last season at 10-6. I am basing this as Ryan Fitzpatrick is not the quarterback for the New York Jets. Patrick mentioned that they might contend for a wild card spot. I only see one team making the playoffs out of this division, and that's the Patriots. I have the Jets at 7-9.
Oof.
I mean, whatever, man. That's just like your opinion. But I could see it happening. I think that all these teams, all those three teams, their range goes from 5-11 to 10-6. So I could see it happening. I'm not really going to make so much of an argument.
Well, and as I look at the schedule, I wanted to bring this up earlier, but I saved it for this point. Assuming a split with Buffalo, which is not out of the realm of possibilities, splits within the division are always sort of expected. You're looking at the Bengals, Buffalo, Kansas City, Seattle, Pittsburgh, Carolina as your first six games of the season, and I've got you 0-6 in those games.
The Jets are 0-6?
Yeah.
In the division or in those games outside?
No, in
of the
those
division?
Games. You're starting.
Oh, I mean, okay. Okay, Pod.
Well, look, Do you see the Jets as being better than the Bengals?
I could see the Jets winning that game in week one, especially if Tyler Eifert isn't playing. And I believe the Jets are at home, right? I mean, right now it's Vegas sent out their spreads and Cincinnati is a 1-point favorite in that game, I believe. A lot of things can happen. And yeah, I could see.
Yeah.
Again, if Fitzpatrick or even if Fitzpatrick isn't there, but I think everyone expects him to be there. I think a lot of people are underestimating Chan Gailey and the offensive firepower in general around that team. So, yeah, I mean, again, I'd rather have low expectations than you saying we're going 11-5. So,
yeah, but more power to even you. Even Chan Gailey as an offensive genius is going up against a pretty decent defense in Cincinnati, Kansas City, Seattle, Pittsburgh, and Carolina. You're looking at the top defenses in the league.
Well, I don't think Kansas City or Pittsburgh are going to be among the top defenses. It's definitely not Pittsburgh, but Kansas City, especially with them losing Justin Houston and a lot of their weapons in the secondary, I think they're going to take a step back this year. But again, we're talking about this on in like mid June, so who knows what's going to happen? But we spent long enough on the Jets prediction, so let's get to the Patriots, who you're probably going to have go 16-0, right?
Incorrect. The Patriots finished last season at 12-4. I am not a big believer in the team this year. I do see them winning the division, but I see them just eking out the division victory with a 10-6 record.
Whoa.
Wow. Yeah.
It's a tough schedule. I have them splitting, going 2-2 during the 4 weeks. We assume Tom Brady's not playing. And honestly, even if Brady is playing, that first game is against Arizona. And I do not like the Patriots' chances against Arizona.
Well, then they'll be in last place after week one. So we'll all celebrate.
I'm also perhaps a little bit higher on the Texans and Pittsburgh than some others. I also have Buffalo pulling off a victory up in Buffalo.
Yeah, I think you just killed Rob.
I think I did. And Patrick is just dumbfounded as well.
Well, I mean, like, I don't know. Like, I think they'll go 12-4 again. But, you know, not to agree too much with AJ, but, you know, who cares?
All right. Those are the win-loss totals. I do have the Patriots in the playoffs, and I will share my postseason thoughts once all the division previews are done. But the Patriots will be playoff bound as division champions. No other team in the AFC East will make it into the playoffs, unfortunately. But there's always next year. Or this year, as you mentioned, this is mid-June. So send in your comments, please. nextfanup@gmail.com. Tweet us at NFU Podcast. And of course, you can check out everything that we do on our Facebook page, facebook.com/NFU Podcast. Please subscribe and leave us a review on iTunes if you're doing so because I asked you to on my birthday on June 9th. Thank you very much. Glad that you finally discovered this podcast and glad that you left a nice review for us. And if you didn't leave us a nice review, well, I'm just glad you left something for us. And with that, I leave you with the immortal words of Jeff Fisher. There you have it.
Well, I think we learned today that, you know, this game is four quarters long.